This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
President Biden's comments about the U.S. defending Taiwan spark reactions and questions about U.S. policy in the region.
Taiwan's foreign ministry has given its gratitude to President Biden and his administration for their ironclad commitment to the country. Beijing was very upset.
Plus, the stock market shows some signs of recovery after weeks of bruising losses. And why people are holding on to their old cars. It's Monday, May 23rd. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. U.S. stocks bounced back today after losses last week raised the specter of the S&P 500 slipping into a bear market. That benchmark ended the day up 1.9%, a relief to investors after it had tumbled to nearly 20% off its January peak. The rally was broad. The Dow rose 2%, or more than 600 points. The Nasdaq closed up 1.6%. The Wall Street Journal's Matt Grossman covers business and financial news.
Stocks were up pretty much across the board. All 11 of the different sectors in the S&P 500 finished the day higher. Financial companies performed very well. JP Morgan said that it had a fairly optimistic outlook for where the economy could head. So that was good news for a lot of banks. And we also saw good performance among consumer companies, companies like Caterpillar and Deere that make equipment that sells well when the economy is doing well. So I think a lot of the trading today reflected some investors taking a look at the economy and thinking maybe this won't be such a terrible path forward as we might have been fearing last week.
Some promising news on COVID-19 vaccines for very young children. Pfizer and BioNTech say preliminary results show three doses of their vaccine were 80% effective and generated a robust immune response in children 6 months to 5 years old. Many of the children in the study had received at least some of their shots during the Omicron wave, suggesting the three-dose series worked well against the highly contagious variant. An unusual outbreak of monkeypox, a rare viral disease that occurs primarily in Western and Central Africa, has sparked a ramp-up of smallpox vaccine production. Monkeypox has been detected in recent weeks in at least 17 countries, including the U.S., U.K., parts of the EU, and Australia. There's no specific vaccine for monkeypox, but Danish vaccine maker Bavarian Nordic will be making more of its smallpox shot, which has been shown to be at least 85% effective at preventing the disease. The CEO says dozens of countries have called about the shots. GameStop has launched a digital wallet for cryptocurrencies and non-fungible tokens, also known as NFTs. The video game company says wallet holders will be able to store, send, receive, and use their crypto coins and NFTs across apps without having to leave their web browsers. The wallet will also enable transactions on GameStop's forthcoming NFT marketplace, which is expected to launch by this summer. And Starbucks is the latest Western company to end its business operations in Russia over the invasion of Ukraine. The global coffee giant says it will permanently close its 130 stores there, putting an end to its 15-year presence in the Russian market. Starbucks says it will keep paying nearly 2,000 employees in Russia for 6 months and help them find new jobs. Coming up, President Biden's comments in Tokyo raise questions about U.S. policy toward Taiwan and China. We'll have more on that after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
As we reported this morning, President Biden made a stir during his visit to Tokyo today when he answered a question about how the U.S. might respond to a Chinese attack on Taiwan.
Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are?
That's a commitment we made.
White House officials quickly came out saying the American position on Taiwan hasn't changed, but China had an angry response. So, is Biden signaling a change in U.S. policy on Taiwan? Joining me now to talk about it is The Wall Street Journal's Will Malden, who covers foreign policy. Hi, Will. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Daniela.
The U.S. has a longstanding policy toward Taiwan it calls strategic ambiguity. Can you talk about what that is and how Biden's comments today relate to it?
Sure. Strategic ambiguity comes from the Taiwan Relations Act, a 1979 law that set out the rules of the road between the U.S. and Taiwan. And under it, the U.S. said it would agree to help with Taiwan's defense through providing weapons and that type of thing, but didn't commit the U.S. to actually militarily defending Taiwan. That leads to the idea of strategic ambiguity. And today, by saying that the U.S. would defend Taiwan, President Biden has appeared to undermine that traditional doctrine a bit of strategic ambiguity while being perfectly in line with the Taiwan Relations Act.
Although his aides seem to have walked it back somewhat, yes?
Yes, they did walk it back, because part of President Biden's answer was that the U.S. had a commitment to defending Taiwan. But in fact, the only known public commitment the U.S. has is helping with Taiwan's own self-defense. Because of that, President Biden's aides have said nothing has changed in terms of Taiwan policy. But because it's a repeated pattern of comments defending Taiwan, it's getting to be, in Washington at least, a little bit less ambiguous than it used to be.
What kind of reactions are we seeing from China and from Taiwan?
Taiwan's foreign ministry has given its gratitude to President Biden and his administration for their ironclad commitment to the country. Beijing was very upset. The foreign ministry spokesman literally raised his voice, our reporter says. So Beijing is not very happy. In the U.S., we're seeing some are glad that the U.S. may be getting rid of strategic ambiguity, and others who are more critical voices against the administration are saying the Biden administration should have been clearer.
This isn't the first time Biden has spoken about Taiwan. What kind of pattern are we seeing in his comments on the issue?
We're seeing a pattern of a willingness to defend Taiwan. This is something that's also coming in the backdrop of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So it's a time when these large, assertive, authoritarian countries, there are a lot of concerns about them invading their neighbors, and there's a lot of concern about what could happen to Taiwan.
So you mentioned Russia and Ukraine. Biden's comment today came up when a reporter asked what the U.S. would do if China invaded Taiwan, given that the U.S. didn't send troops to Ukraine after Russia invaded. Is Biden promising to do more if China were to invade Taiwan than it has done in Ukraine?
He may well be, but remember, it's a little bit different. Taiwan is an island, and if China blockaded it, at least the main part of Taiwan is one island, it would be harder to get weapons in. It would be harder to help out with that conflict. The U.S. might have to come directly, whereas with Ukraine, weapons could be provided through Poland to a very large degree.
Is it likely that China would invade Taiwan?
Well, we really don't know. It's likelier than it used to be, according to lots of analysts and officials and lawmakers that I've listened to in the last few years. The Chinese military and Navy is getting stronger and better able to coordinate with something like this. Certainly, Xi Jinping, the leader of China, has expressed a desire to reunify with Taiwan, ideally through peaceful means, but potentially through other means. So that could very well be his legacy. So we don't know the answer, but it certainly appears to be a growing risk.
All of this commentary comes when the president was speaking in Tokyo. That's where the U.S. is trying to shore up allies with a new trade plan called the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. And I was wondering if Biden's comments on Taiwan overshadowed the work that he's trying to do on building this economic agreement.
They probably did. And it's no accident that the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework has been criticized by some fans of trade agreements for being relatively light on the economic ties and trade rules and opening up markets. This is something that could be very important for starting the path of countries linking together in the Indian and Pacific Ocean regions. But it's not something that's, of the same sort of economic integration as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, or other major trade deals.
Oh, the TPP, that's the agreement that the U.S. under Trump withdrew from in 2017. So is this new agreement going to be strong enough to sort of replace that?
It's a different type of agreement. Instead of, you know, getting rid of tariffs and opening up markets broadly, it's more about setting rules of the road of the kind favored by the U.S. and some similar democracies in the area.
That new economic framework does not include China or Taiwan. Do you think the trade agreement is strong enough to offer a counterweight to Beijing?
If it's the first step in broader integration, it certainly could be. But in general, China is such an economic heavyweight in the area that a lot of countries are more interested in that sort of deep levels of trade. And because of that, that's why you wouldn't want to include Taiwan, because it would leave those countries sort of split in the middle between China and Taiwan.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Will Malden. He covers foreign policy. Thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, cars on American roads are growing a little mature. The average car is more than 12 years old, a record, according to S&P Global Mobility. Why are our cars getting so senior? Supply chain disruptions have left dealer lots low on supply, and prices on new and used cars have gone up, so people are holding on to their old wheels. Plus, the quality has improved, and cars are lasting longer. Our autos reporter, Nora Eckert, says all of that has been a windfall for mechanics.
Speaking with several auto repair shops, I learned that this has been one of the busiest years for them, as they're seeing customers be more and more willing to put money into a service bill instead of buying a new car. So previously, where a lot of customers were making this judgment over, is it worth just putting this money into a new car? Now a lot of them are funneling that money into their existing cars because it's such a nightmare to find a replacement in this market.
And drivers could be holding on to their older cars well into 2023 as computer chip shortages keep production bottlenecked. And that's What's News for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. Thank you for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.